Star Trek, our favorite frontier. These are the podcasts of Aaron and Polly, their ongoing mission to explore all things Trek, to seek out cool things and pick them apart, to boldly complain as no one's complained before.
And this is Paul.
And welcome back after a long hiatus to Star Trek with Aaron and Polly.
Very, very exciting. After all this time, Aaron, we are back.
That's right. We are back for the final season of Star Trek Discovery. So season.
But is it the final season of Star Trek, Aaron and Polly?
No.
I don't think so.
Couldn't possibly be.
We've got that Section 31 movie coming, and another season of Strange New World. So, yeah, I mean, we will be back.
There's all kinds of stuff that we're going to be talking about in relation to Star Trek. But, Paul, I've got a question for you.
Uh-oh.
I know you are not a coffee drinker.
I am not.
But maybe the reason why you are not a coffee drinker is because you've never had a Star Trek-themed coffee to drink.
I mean, maybe. I don't feel like that would change it, but
I mean,
it's a hypothesis that I haven't tested.
If you had the opportunity to drink yourself some Vulcan Vanilla or some, you know, Captain Kirk's Captain's Choice, those would be coffees that might tempt you. These are coming from Pop Culture Coffee.
Okay.
I have to say I have never felt, you know, like I particularly needed a Star Trek coffee. But I'm a little amused. You know, the promo art that they have has Captain Kirk on the Captain's Choice medium roast coffee. And then Vulcan Vanilla featuring, you know, Mr. Spock on a bag of vanilla coffee. And here are my thoughts. One, you're never going to sell me on ground coffee. I'm a whole bean guy, and these are ground coffees. So, you know, I'm not going to be buying your Star Trek coffee. But if I was interested, it seems to me like there are two huge misses in their marketing here. First off, there is no character more than Captain Janeway that I associate with coffee. I mean, that was a theme throughout her entire run on Voyager, was that they had to get more power to the replicators so she could get her cup of coffee. You know, the whole, there's coffee in that nebula, right? I mean, Captain Janeway, big time coffee drinker, and nowhere on their promo art that they've released is she featured. They say that, you know, there will be some Captain Janeway coffee at some point, but the next three blends is a Klingon Rock DiGino, a Federation French Roast, and the Borg Blend. So, five coffees later, they'll talk about doing a Captain Janeway roast. I think that's a huge miss. And the other flavor, I mean, I don't know why, you know, Rock DiGino was a drink all through Deep Space Nine. Why in the world wouldn't that be, you know, one of the initial releases? You know,
I think these are questions that we need to ask Pop Culture Coffee right now.
Right now. Get them on the phone, Paul.
I don't know how. But next time. Next time, but probably not.
I mean, $18 a bag for a 12-ounce bag of coffee. That seems a little pricey.
That is a $1.50 you said it gets you 8 cups?
No, it gets you a
12 cups.
A 12-ounce bag.
A 12-ounce bag, so $1.50 an ounce. I don't know. Feels like a lot.
It does to me as well. It does to me as well. But I'm not sold on that. I'm not sure that you're gonna sell me on it. But it seems like they're also not trying really hard. That's all I'm saying. But hey, you know, I'm not here to curse the Star Trek darkness. You know, I'm here to light a candle, and one of the ways I'll do that is to tell you, my friends, I am all caught up on reading my Star Trek comics.
My goodness. I mean, That was a lot of comics, I'm assuming, because I am way behind. I haven't read a single issue. I've maybe read one comic since Day of Blood.
I haven't read a single Star Trek comic since we recorded our last Star Trek with Aaron and Polly. So, you know, however many months ago that was. So I had a big stack virtual because I'm digital. I had a big read pile for Star Trek, the Star Trek comic, the Star Trek Defiant comic, and also another book that I want to talk about. But let me just say, I think Star Trek and Star Trek Defiant recovered beautifully, telling, you know, where the stories diverge after Day of Blood. I think both of those books are really high quality. I like them a great deal. And they're a book that really surprised me. And I got to remember what it's called. Give me half a second. Vamp for just a second, Paul.
Okay. I can vamp.
It is, that's not the right one. Here we go. It is, gosh, where is it? It's the one with the Star Trek Sons.
I think it's called Sons of Star Trek.
Sons of Star Trek or Star Trek Sons or, you know, something like that. But mm-hmm. It's got Alexander in it, you know, who is, of course, all jacked up after the Day of Blood. Mm-hmm. You've got Nog in it from Deep Space Nine. You've got Sisko. His son, I forget his son's name, Jake Sisko. And it they also have Q's son from the Voyager episode in which you got Q2. Oh, they call him Q Jr. in this. That book is surprisingly good.
Oh, really?
I really have to recommend it. I just deeply enjoyed the story there. I will also tell you that there is a annual issue in Star Trek Defiant featuring Sela, you know, the alternate universe Tasha Yar's daughter. And that book is surprisingly good. It's the Star Trek Defiant annual, I believe. And that book is really, really good. I enjoyed it a great deal. There's actual, and this will surprise everyone, there's actual character development for Sela. Whether or not that remains is something else, but it really told an interesting story about her backstory, and a revelation that occurs. I very much enjoyed it. So, guys, I'm here to tell you that the state of the Star Trek comics is strong.
I was about to say, it sounds like everything's been coming up Milhouse in those Star Trek
really
comics.
It really has. It really has. I got caught up. I was on vacation, and the great thing about vacation is it provides me a lot of opportunity to read things for me versus, you know, reading things for somebody else. And it was really enjoyable to go from one fantastic comic to another. Deeply enjoyable.
So, okay.
Highly recommended.
Well, I will have to get caught up. I mean, it'll take me a while because I've probably got 4 issues, give or take, of each title to get caught up on, probably?
I think I had 8 or 10 books that I had to read through all of that. And I say had to, that I read through all of that and just very much enjoyed.
Okay.
So
I will get caught up. I'm excited, you know, it's that to hear, because I was worried, you know, honestly, when Day of Blood ended, I'm like, okay, you know, and it happened to coincidentally wrap up around the time we were going to take a hiatus from this podcast anyway, so I'm like, I'll get caught up. And then it just kind of fell to the bottom of the read pile.
Yeah.
But I will have to get caught up.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is, you know, we record a weekly comic book podcast, and largely my reading is determined by what we're going to talk about on Saturday. And anything that we're not talking about tends to get shuffled, you know, to a read pile. And so books that I'm very much enjoying, I just don't get to until I have an opportunity to read when we've got a bi-week or when I'm on vacation or something like that. So it was terrific. But, you know, Paul, we've established you are not a coffee man, right?
I am not.
But I know, Paul, that you are, in fact, an audiophile.
I don't know if that's true either.
Well, I mean, you are Mr. Vinyl.
Oh, in that case, yes.
Yeah. So I know right up your alley is the LP release of Strange New Worlds Subspace Rhapsody. Yeah, you're going to get that on vinyl and just really, you know, rock out on your show tunes.
I think the less I listen to that again, the better. I mean, I think if I were to recall, because I've only seen the episode when we podcasted about it. I mean, I think we enjoyed the episode. At least I believe I did. But I didn't feel like there was necessarily anything to revisit just listening to the soundtrack necessarily.
Well, I was, you know,
I appreciate your attempt. I appreciate you trying.
I'm trying to sell you some Star Trek here, Paul.
That's all my money remains in my... Well, no, I've been buying the comics. I just haven't read them, so...
Okay. All right. Well, maybe I could interest you in a film production, you know, company. Maybe you want to buy some Paramount, like Skybound.
I can try. So now we're talking. Now here's an offer that here's something that's up my alley that may intrigue me. Well, but wait, Aaron, before we talk about Skybound buying Paramount, Skydance.
Yeah.
Yeah, Skybound. Whoa, Robert Kirkman really stepped up in the world. Let's talk about this audiophile thing a little. Okay. Well, this vinyl thing a little bit more.
Okay.
So I'm assuming that is this a special edition? Is this something you'll be purchasing?
That I'll be purchasing? Oh, dear God, no.
Yeah. But tell me, though, who's the company that's releasing, or is Audiophile the company that's releasing it?
Oh, no. The company releasing, see what it tells me, it says the pre-order is already sold out, for one.
Oh, okay. Well, if you're listening to this, it's already over.
Yeah. But there is a limited vinyl album release from Lakeshore Records. It was announced at a sing-along screening of the episode at WonderCon, and the album arrives on June 7th, and pre-orders are already sold out, so...
Sorry, you missed out on it, people.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Hopefully you were paying attention already.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, so I think, just for what it's worth, I'm wrong. I mean, people did want to revisit it. It also includes an a cappella version of the Star Trek Strange New Worlds theme, mm-hmm. and the instrumental melody from the episode's closing credits. So it's more than just the soundtrack of the episode.
I will admit there are a couple of tracks from that episode that appeared in one of my playlists.
Oh.
I will say that. But I will also say that I will remind you that I found the music in that episode to be largely underwhelming.
Yeah.
You know, I think there were, and surprisingly, I thought both of the songs sung by Christina Chong were wildly underwhelming and way too long. And I think they leaned on the fact that, you know, she has a pop music career in addition to her Star Trek role. And it just wasn't as good as I thought they hoped it was going to be. I thought the better songs were sung by Ethan Peck, who's her face that plays Nurse Chapel, and a brief song, very brief because he can't sing, Anson Mount. So not the vocal talent that they were leaning on both in Uhura's character and in Christina Chong's character.
No. So. Well.
But yeah.
Well, so even if I wanted to, I couldn't spend money because it's sold out.
Pre-order. I'm sure that you can still get it retail. So.
Oh, okay.
You never know.
Hopefully.
Yeah. It'll have a juicy markup on eBay.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Okay, now we can talk about Skydance.
Yes, even though it says Skybound in our notes.
Yeah, so I'm going to have to keep reminding myself not to say Skybound. All right, so Skydance is, you know what's weird? For some reason, I thought Skydance was the company owned by, or I don't know, I thought that Tom Cruise had something to do with Skydance.
He does.
Skydance. Oh, he does.
Well, in that Skydance produced Mission Impossible.
Oh, okay. So he's not part of the board or anything like that.
I don't believe so. I mean, he's probably a stakeholder, or a shareholder, I should say. But I know that they produced the Mission Impossible movies. I don't know.
They also produced the Star Trek movies from Paramount.
Yeah, for JJ. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, they've got a history with Star Trek. Sure, they've got a history. You know, they've got a history with Paramount properties. And they're saying, you know, the news this week is that they really want to juice up Paramount Plus. Because I know that, you know, I had some serious concerns that they might decide to get out of the streaming business.
Yeah, I mean, if that's been the word on the street, right? That Paramount Plus is not been fruitful, so they're looking at.
All the streamers are cutting back on content.
Yeah.
And, you know, so a lot of what had been discussed previously around Star Trek, you know, that there would be this, you know, ongoing churn of new content got called into question. And so, you know, it's if this Skydance merger acquisition occurs, it may be good news for Star Trek. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we know, and we talked a little bit, you know, I briefly mentioned them that we've got some more Star Trek content, but as far as I know, because Section 31 has finished filming, I believe Strange New Worlds may still be filming. I don't know.
Yeah, okay. I think Strange New Worlds has finished shooting, I think they finished.
I don't know, because of the actor strike and the writer strike. Well, regardless, it's in some form of production, whether it's, you know, post or in production itself. But there has been nothing announced post either of those, like officially greenlit in pre-production to our knowledge, right?
Right. Other than, you're right, in terms of series.
Are you going to hit me with this podcast thing, the Con podcast?
We know that we have another season of Strange New Worlds coming.
Yes.
We know that we'll come back and talk about Section 31 in a moment. But, you know, we know that that has finished shooting and is now in post-production. And we know that Starfleet Academy
has
been approved.
Okay.
And so, sadly... from my perspective anyway, I think we're going to get a 32nd century Starfleet Academy, which I can't say I'm particularly worried about. And that'll probably come up when we talk about the second episode of this season of Star Trek Discovery. But let's get back to movies. Section 31, Star Trek movie. Yeah, it's going straight to streaming, but it be done. And, you know, a lot of folks, us included, at one point or another, said it would never happen.
Yeah. I mean, the jury's out on whether it should have, because for what it's worth, I felt like, you know, while I adore Michelle Yeoh, I felt like episodes that focused on her tended to feel less Star Trek to me, you know, a little bit rooted in the darkness, as it were. And I didn't necessarily care for that. And I didn't have much of an interest in Section 31. But, you know, I do appreciate Michelle Yeoh. And I'm hopeful that whatever they're doing will be good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I'm sure it'll be, you know, lots of action and whatnot. And I read today that there is a callback to Next Generation in it. The character of Captain Nancy Garrett will appear. And if you'll recall... Captain Nancy Garrett was the captain of the USS Enterprise C that came through the temporal rift that created the situation in which alternate universe Tasha Yar went back in time to give birth to the Romulan Sela. And so Nancy Garrett will be appearing in this, according to what I read today. So I think that's kind of interesting that it is taking place, I think they said 40 years prior to Star Trek The Next Generation. So I think that's a little bit interesting.
Okay. Well, I, you know, for me, I'm hopeful. Yeah. Like you said, there has not been a lot revealed about the story that this will tell besides what Aaron has just shared. So I'm curious. I don't know. We'll see. But it is, you know, to your point, it's the only movie that has, you know, is anywhere near being released. And it's Paramount Plus content. And then the Starfleet Academy has been, I believe, greenlit, like officially greenlit to move into production. But that's it. And that's I'm hopeful that this Skybound news will result in an investment in something. You know, I don't know. You know, we've talked quite a bit about some of the failure to start Star Trek projects over these last, Lord, it's probably been 10 years, you know, of failed Star Trek projects. Because when was Star Trek Beyond? I don't know, that feels like that was
2016
something like that. So 8 years of Star Trek projects
I think that's right. I'm not looking
for anything. Right. I just looked it up.
Okay.
But, you know, for me, it's the question becomes, you know, they've all failed for different reasons. And is the investment that Skydance is putting into, you know, assuming that the deal goes through, right? That's the thing. If the deal goes through, and it will Skydance find a way to break through whatever creative slump is prohibiting us from getting a new Star Trek movie?
Right.
Hopefully.
So there are two Star Trek movie scripts in the works right now. There is the Star Trek IV movie script, which I forget which number of Star Trek IV script we're on now. And when I say Star Trek IV, I'm talking about for the Kelvin universe. But Paul, you know, nothing says Star Trek to me like Steve Yockey, who is the creator of the Max series, The Flight Attendant, with Kaley Cuoco. I mean, if there were anybody with some Star Trek bona fides, it's Steve Yockey, creator of the Max series, The Flight Attendant, with Kaley Cuoco. And that's according to Variety. The fourth franchise installment, which will serve as the final chapter of the film series, has been in development limbo with Paramount and Bad Robot for years. You know, Matt Shackman? Do I have the name right?
Yeah, Matt Shackman. Mm-hmm.
He was recently attached, and he left, and now they've got, you know, Steve Yockey coming in to write a new script. But, you know, the other film is a Star Trek prequel film, and it is also in development with J.J. Abrams producing, and Toby Haynes from Andor, which, you know, is kind of promising, set to direct from a script by Seth Graham Smith, who did the Lego Batman movie.
Okay. He also did, I believe, I could be wrong here, but I feel like he did Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Maybe.
He did. He wrote the book. I don't know that he had much to do with the movie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sorry. I appreciate that you got Toby Haynes on this and Seth Graham Smith, but who's going to beat the pedigree of Steve Yockey, creator of the Max series, The Flight Attendant, with Kaley Cuoco?
Well, clearly that is a film that will break the creative slump.
You know what we're going to call that? We're going to call it cinema, Paul.
Exactly.
It's cinema.
I'm looking forward to that.
I just found it so amusing. Steve Yockey.
your excitement is hard to contain.
It's palpable, is what it is.
It is.
So, Paul, I think we have exhausted those things that we can talk about. We have delayed the inevitable, Paul. We have to talk about Star Trek Discovery Season 5, Episode 1, Red Directive. I don't want to bury the lead here. I will confess to our listeners that I saw this before Paul did.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent him a note over the weekend, and I said, this is going to be a very long season. And I did not enjoy episode 1, Red Directive. Paul, I'm interested to hear your thoughts.
Honestly, I didn't dislike it. And that's not to say that, that I have a different opinion than yours. I certainly have a number of qualms or complaints about these two episodes. But one, I can see why they released two episodes simultaneously.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, it's the exact trick that we've talked about before. You always release two episodes if the first one sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say the first one, for me, I don't feel like the first one sucked. I felt like it was I'm trying to figure out the right way to say it. I felt like the first one was too much flash for not enough substance.
I agreed. Yeah.
You know, I felt like it spent all, you know, they really threw a lot of money into this episode showing Captain Burnham. And I'm going to talk about this in a moment. Mm-hmm. Captain Burnham riding on top of a spaceship going through war.
Oh, yeah.
Captain Burnham on a motor, you know, like a an air motorcycle, I don't know what you want to call it, an air bike, like through the desert of escaping an avalanche. And they spent a lot of money into action sequences and special effects when really,
I would have rather
do it. Like basically some smugglers kidnapped something the Federation wanted, and they asked Discovery to go after them, and and that's basically it. There wasn't much substance to the episode. It was all flat, all style, no substance, I felt. Now, that being said, special effects were very good. The money was there. There were, there's a pretty significant moment with two Federation ships crashing into the desert that felt movie quality to me. But, it gave me a little bit of a, there were a number of things that immediately concerned me, but the one thing that both of these episodes shared is that while I don't mind, I've certainly complained about her in the past, Captain Burnham. Mm-hmm. It just feels like it's turning into the Captain Burnham show.
Yeah.
And, at the expense of, these two episodes very much focused on the same core four of Burnham, Stamets, the Doctor, whose name I forget, and Book, right? And that's at the expense of everyone else. Like, there are other characters we've talked about in the past.
And we introduce new characters and don't bother to develop any of our other characters.
Exactly.
And that's one of my big objections. But I'm going to back up.
Yes.
First off, we open up the show with what apparently is bring your non-binary daughter to work day, to a work party day. Adira is at this cocktail party. Mm-hmm. And the first thing out of my mind, I know that she's a Starfleet officer, but is she old enough to drink? We established when she first arrives on the show in season 3? Is that right?
Yes.
I think that's right. Season 3. She is 15 years old. How much time has passed? Because I am really concerned about her and maybe the drinking age.
I don't feel
age.
Like that much time has passed between these two seasons.
Either. I don't think so either.
Well, let me clarify. I could be wrong there because the Saru has certainly gotten to a point in his relationship that they are now talking about getting married.
Uh-huh.
Right. And with that in mind, there clearly some time has passed because that was just starting in the last season.
Yeah.
So I guess there's potential that some time has passed.
I just have to say I'm deeply concerned about the drinking. and Paul, I saw something that I felt like was going to concern you, the bursting of the cocktail bubble with the server's fingers.
Yeah, I was like,
and I was like, I can't imagine that. Paul is a noted cocktailologist. And I'd be like, I can't imagine that Paul's down for this.
No, it's funny because I did notice that. So, they're at the Starfleet party and the server brings them four cocktails and they try to make them look futuristic by putting smoke bubbles on top of them because that's not something we can do in 2024. It is. but, it's blue and sparkly. So whatever. I mean, it's a fun looking drink, but the server pops the bubbles with her own finger and then walks off. And I'm like, I don't feel like you should be doing that.
Yeah, that is wildly nasty.
Yeah, don't stick your finger in my drink.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed on that
yeah.
one.
Yeah, I know that. I mean, I really needed the Dira to say, yeah, I know I used to have a symbiont in my belly, but this isn't something I'm interested in. I don't need your finger in my drink. Just because I have a symbiont in my belly doesn't mean I want your finger in my drink. That's all.
To be fair, none of them seem to drink the drink. I mean, they looked at
fair.
It,
yeah. They all commented on it. Yeah. 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 I completely grossed out on that. And I was like, man, I know, I feel like Paul's going to have something to say about this. So we're having this party and Kovich summons, Burnham, she got an urgent meeting and we can't just go to a meeting room. And by the way, we have the meeting room sets, right? Mm. We can't just go to a meeting room. We've got to go to the white room.
The infinity room.
Yeah. The infinity room, this alternate space exists outside of regular space room so that nobody can listen in.
Well, I want to pause on that because it is revealed later in the episode that the infinity room is literally just, what's the character's name?
Kovich's
office, but turned into a holodeck. So I felt, because later on he just says, you know, end hologram, and it's just his office. And I thought that was a little disappointing, like, they, you know, because they, you know, they would call it the Infinity Room. I'm like, it's just a holodeck. You've had this technology for over 1,000 years, but maybe, I don't know, maybe the technology behind holodecks got lost in the burn and they're just revisiting it or something, because they seem to make a big deal out of what is essentially a holodeck.
I don't know, but let me tell you, I dislike how we, you know, beam from everywhere and we don't actually go to a transporter room anymore. You know, even in Next Generation, even though they had the site-to-site beaming, they still would go to the transporter room. I really dislike how we beam everywhere now. I like a transporter room. I just like it. I like the aesthetic of it. Just saying. And I don't mean to be all Grandpa hates new Star Trek, but I found particularly this first episode, with one exception, to really grate on my nerves.
Yeah, I mean, there were just a lot of things that I felt were, like, for what it's worth, we had a big teary goodbye with Book at the end of the prior season. He's back. Spoilers. Literally, first episode, he's back, and he's back on the ship in the same capacity that he was previously. So I'm like, huh.
And what was the point? That's what I don't get, is I honestly feel like they should have just left him off, because he had a big goodbye.
Yeah.
And he was going to be, you know, serving this sentence for an indefinite amount of time. There was no reason to bring him back.
Or wait till mid-season.
And I honestly, I like David Ajala a lot. I think I got the name right. David Ajala. I think he's a great actor. I really do. I don't think that he and Sonequa Martin-Green have that much chemistry. They don't light up the screen for me. And I just don't think that, you know, you're in your last 10 episodes of this series. Why waste the time with that guy when you've already closed him out in the prior season? It really seems to me like you should be spending time developing the characters that we really haven't gotten to know well. I want to see more about Detmer and Owo.
Yeah.
I love those characters.
Who are relegated to basically one or two shots in these episodes. Not scenes, shots.
And I'm just like, and we're talking about two episodes here. So, you know, 20% of the final season, and neither one of them are used to great effect. Mm-hmm. And they are literally my favorite characters on this show. I love both of them. And when they're given an opportunity, they light up the screen. And it's one of those things I don't understand why they didn't lean into it. And, you know, they did an artful job. This is what I'll give this the first episode credit for. They did an artful job introducing Captain Rayner. And he gave me really strong Todd Stashwick vibes.
He did.
You know, because he's a bit of an ass.
Which is, for what it's worth, felt totally intentional. Like, we need to introduce a character because that character was
such a hit. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like the actor. I mean, he's kind of like, you know, he gives off that what is his name? Suddenly drawn a blank on the last James Bond.
Daniel Craig?
Yeah, Daniel Craig.
He gives off Daniel Craig vibes. And because I'm like, that guy looks familiar. And I had to look up and I forgot he was in Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah. He's great. Yeah, he was. He was the guy they left behind.
Yeah.
I forget which number he was, but he was the first guy they left behind in the miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's great. And, you know, I spent an unreasonable amount of time staring at his ears going, is he Vulcan? Is he Romulan? No, he's a Kelleran.
I wondered the same.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, you can not all pointed-eared people are Vulcans or Romulans.
Yeah, Aaron.
That's right. That's right. Stop stereotyping. but anyway, I dug him. I dug him in both episodes. You know, and spoilers, he's going to be the new executive officer because, you know, Saru accepts the ambassador job.
Yeah, so let's
shift gears over
to I don't want to shift gears because I want to talk about that. I want to talk about that exact thing.
Okay. Stop yelling at me.
I'm yelling at you, Aaron, because I'm passionate about it.
Okay.
All right. So, Captain Rayner is introduced in the first episode. he, you know, as an asshole, you know, kind of a foil to Captain Burnham, but they have to team up to capture the smugglers on this, like, desert planet. And unfortunately, what ends up happening is he makes a bad judgment call, and it results in basically giving the bad guys an idea, and they, you know, fire on this mountain, causing this huge avalanche that then the two Federation ships have to save the village. It's a beautifully filmed and special effect, you know, scene. But as a result, you know, of putting those people in danger, he has to go to court, right? You know, he has to go in front of the president and the admiral of Starfleet and basically plead his case, and ends up, long story short, losing his job. Now, in this time period, while this is happening, Book has now come back onto the ship, and, you know, Captain Burnham is like, I don't know what to do with them. And, you know, Saru has announced that he's leaving the ship to get married. And so he's like, if you need a number two, I recommend Book. And I'm like, okay, that seems an unusual choice.
That's not what he said. He said, I recommend somebody like Book.
Somebody like Book, correct. He recommended somebody like Book. But, you know, at first I was like, that seems like a horrible idea, because Book, it, you know, basically put the entire universe in danger.
Right.
But, you know, let's let him on the ship, and hey, let's promote him. But hey, you know, that's what we do in Star Trek Discovery, right? But then, to your point, you know, like Aaron just mentioned, at the end of the next episode, Under the Twin Moons, Captain Burnham decides, you know what, I'm going to ask Rayner to be my number one instead. Now that Saru has left the ship, Captain Rayner, maybe you can be my number one. And I have so many problems with that.
Uh-huh.
One, he got fired that day from Starfleet.
Yeah, yeah.
That day. And she's like, I already talked to them and they said this is cool. I'm like, they fired him.
Uh-huh.
That day, and they were okay with you hiring him. And then second of all, if I'm Captain Rayner, I'm like, you were the one who got me fired, and now you're asking me to be your second in command.
In all fairness, he told her in the hearing to speak her mind.
He did.
I mean, she was trying to be discreet about it, and he's like, nah, you didn't have any problem calling me out on it yesterday. Go ahead. You know, my objection is I wanted to see him struggle a little bit more with, now wait just a damn minute, I've got more years being a captain than you. Why in the hell would I be your exec? Shouldn't it be the other way around? I wanted to see him struggle with that. Maybe we'll see it in future episodes. Yeah. My biggest objection is the problem that I literally had with Discovery since the jump, is that we haven't spent enough time developing other characters so that someone could grow within the family. Like, you know, it would have been nice had, you know, Detmer or Owo been a consideration, but we haven't spent enough time with them for them to demonstrate leadership, right? You know, Reese is practically a non-character, in my opinion. Tilly's not an option because, you know, she's off doing her Starfleet thing. There really are no other strong characters within the cast that could be considered. And so we're going to spend, this is what gripes me, we're going to spend time, I assume, with Rayner when we could be spending time with other characters.
Yeah, and we had to introduce a new character in the final season of the show rather than have enough character development in the rest of the crew that they could have been first officers.
Yeah.
And that's the complaint we've had this, you know, for years now about Star Trek Discovery. And please understand, you know, I honestly thought I was going to hate watch Discovery this season, you know, and I try not to do that, but I'm not. I actually found enjoyable moments in both episodes, and I'm not hate watching it. Like, I enjoyed both. I would say actually both episodes were fine.
I substantially disliked the first episode. I thought episode two recovered nicely. I really enjoyed I enjoyed spending some time with Rainer, and so you heard me just gripe about that a second ago. My objection is not spending time with Rainer. My objection is that we've got all these other characters that we know and love that we're not going to get to spend time with because there's only so much time left.
Yeah.
And I hate that because there is no doubt in my mind that when this show wraps, I'm never going to see Detmer and Owo again. And I really enjoy their dynamic and would love to see more about them. This episode, we did get to revisit with Gray, Adira's boyfriend. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that's all we're going to get to see of Gray this season.
Right? Yeah, I don't know. They have hinted that, you know, Adira is actually pretty happy to not have Gray on the ship, which,
uh-huh.
you know, understandable. There was a lot of drama there at the end.
Well, and I mean, back to my point about her age, you know, young people, you know, love hot and then, you know, things change all of a sudden. I mean, that's not unusual for someone that age. I would hope that, you know, someone who falls in love at 15 is not, you know, linking themselves to a lifelong decision at that time. Right. Adira needs to get out and see other people. She needs to, I'm sorry, they need to experience life.
Yeah.
You know, not get, and Gray, who is super mature. I mean, isn't Gray like, the original symbiont for Gray was like super old. I mean, it always struck me as a little creepy at Gray's relationship with a 15-year-old. You know,
yeah. We did talk about that. That's not new. We actually did talk about on a prior episode.
That always struck me as creepy, and you know, I always kind of side-eyed everybody on Discovery. Shouldn't you guys be saying something about that? Isn't that you know? Don't
they're way less judgmental about that stuff in the 32nd century.
apparently. Well, and I think one of our comments was that, you know, with the burn and whatnot, that maybe society had collapsed so far in itself that wasn't a thing. But
but no, they've recovered in most ways.
Yeah. One of the things I really enjoyed about the show was Fred, the Sung android.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty cool.
I have to tell you, I am not sure that I am prepared to count Fred out. I feel like, you know, we looked at Stamets really hard, you know, Stamets who got a demotion and title change.
Mm-hmm.
He's a luminary now. I suspect his new hobby is going to be Sung style androids, and that he's going to, you know, rebuild Fred.
I would not be surprised to find out. He's looking for something, right? He's looking for some direction in life.
Yeah.
And
now that he's not going to have Spore Drive to play with anymore.
Yeah. So it does seem, and that, you know, when Fred came on board, Sam had seemed really interested in that. So I think you might be onto something there. Yeah. Now we've got 8 episodes to figure it out.
Down for a return on Fred. And again, I know this contradicts everything that I've just said about we've not spent enough time with our characters.
To a certain extent, I think that's because, had we spent more time with these characters, we wouldn't be so open to something. But, you know, they introduce these characters that are, for what it's worth, more interesting because they do find ways to, you know, to make them a little bit different than the norm. You know, because we don't spend enough time with Owo or with Detmer, you know, a character like Fred is memorable in the short little bit of time we spend with him on screen.
Yeah, I enjoyed that short little moment that we had with him, and you know, you knew from the back of a headshot, just like, oh, this looks like Data, right? I mean, it was just immediately because you could get the hint of the hue of his flesh. I got a kick out of that. I like the idea, you know, that you've got some Sung style androids still roaming around out there, and it kind of amuses me because you know, Data became suicidal after having lived for only, you know, 60 years or so.
Yeah.
And this thing's walking around and he's like, you know, 700 years old. I found that a little amusing. Like, you know, what the hell? I think what Data needed was some behavioral health.
Yeah.
you know, so he needed that. He needed some therapy and an intervention. But you know, this guy's, you know, happily found things to entertain himself.
Well, maybe
so.
Data just needed to get into crime.
Maybe.
maybe that's really all Data needed, yeah, was to just be a bad guy.
So, well, you know, we reveal that the big thing that we never talked about, Locke and
Molly or Mol?
Yeah, Mol. Mol.
Mol. Mol. Yeah.
But, you know, the two baddies who are, you know, trying to steal what the Romulan from, you know, 600 years ago stole. Or hid, turns out he was protecting the secret of the progenitors, you know, harkening back to the Star Trek The Next Generation episode, The Chase, in which we learned that an ancient race of hyper-intelligent aliens seeded the cosmos with all humanoid life so that, you know, we are all related. Klingon, human, Vulcan, Andorian, even the godless Romulans. We are all related through the progenitors, and, you know, it is assumed that the progenitors have some wild, wacky, advanced super science that we all want to get our hands on. So that's what the chase is this season.
Mm-hmm. That's the MacGuffin, right, that we've established.
Yeah, and so I am hoping that we defy expectations and solve the entire thing, you know, by episode 5. I don't know that I can bear going through 10 episodes of chasing Maul and Locke.
Yeah, and you know, they've implemented the same trope as Star Wars: The Force Awakens, where there is a map and they have to travel to different places across the universe to get pieces of the star map to discover where the
Luke Skywalker is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. To discover where Luke Skywalker is. And when they did that, I'm like, eh. But I do hope, to your point, I do hope that they resolve that more in the first half of the season, and then, you know, kind of moving to, because it's a hell of a MacGuffin to be the thing that they wrap up on, right? The thing that they wrap up on has nothing to do with any of the prior seasons, has nothing to do with, you know, what they've established about the characters. Like, what about control? What about some of the things that we've established throughout the series that remain unresolved? Will they come into play, or is this just like a brand new season that just happens to be the end?
So, you know, in the second episode, there is a big conversation between Saru and Burnham. And, you know, she's talking to him like, you know, you were always there for me. You gave me a second chance. You did this. You did that. You were like my brother. They talk about the times they've shared together. And not once do either one of them mention Captain Georgiou. I'm not talking about Emperor Georgiou. I'm talking about Captain Georgiou, who was like a mother to both of them. I was stunned that they didn't call her out on that.
Yeah.
Stunned. Stunned, Paul. They set the phasers to stunned.
and that's where Aaron remains.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm bitching about it, but I enjoyed the second episode. And I was relieved that it was not nearly as terrible as the first episode. And, you know, you were absolutely right, Paul. You know, the special effects in the first episode were great, with the exception of the motorcycle bikes, because at no point did it look like Burnham, Rayner, or Book were actually on a motorcycle. You know, that was moving, because, you know, you could just tell they're just sitting there rocking that thing back and forth. There was nothing about it that made it look like they were moving. I was just like, and it just seemed silly to me to drop your starships to block the avalanche.
Yeah.
I kept thinking that, you know, they would come down and like extend their shields or something like that. But the physical crashing of your ship into the sand dunes just seemed a bit ridiculous. It was pretty, but, you know, it reminded me very much of Star Trek Nemesis, with Burnham and Book and Rayner riding motorcycles across the desert. It gave those dune buggy vibes. Things,
yeah.
And so when, you know, in Nemesis, you know, we find, you know, Sung Android B4 out in the desert, you know, it is a little, you know, suspect that we find Fred in the village. I was just a little, this is you're taking the wrong lessons from Star Trek Nemesis. I'm just saying. But anyway. So, you know, Paul, I'm 50-50 right now. I got okay. one episode that I really strongly disliked. I got an episode that I liked more than I disliked. I'm really hoping that we're on a trend with our one data point, you know, that we are improving and that wasn't just a fluke. That's
I
all
think I'm
saying.
More like 60-40. And that's because I liked each episode about
the same.
About the same, right? Which, so I didn't dislike one episode. I liked each episode about the same. Now, before we wrap up, I do have a question. Do we know if the release schedule for this final season is a consistent, weekly cadence, or will we have a break, you know, part one or two, as so many of these streaming services
are wanting to do? I believe it's 9 weeks straight. I think it's 9 weeks.
Okay. I mean, that would be my preference, right? Like, don't give me 5 episodes and then make me wait till 2025 other episodes.
There has been no announcement that it's a partial season.
Okay.
So I think we're 9 weeks straight.
Okay. Yeah, because I remember when they announced that it was the final season a while back, and I just couldn't remember if they had articulated any of that stuff, but...
Yeah. Okay. Well, I am hopeful that they defy expectations, that they will resolve this issue sooner rather than later. What I tend to expect is that, you know, the strongest weapon was among us all along. It was the love for one another was kind of what I expect. But what I'd love for them to find is true super science that changes everything, and they have to live with those consequences. That's what I want to see, right? Mm-hmm. I want to see them find actual something that's going to mess up everything, and they got to figure their way out of it. I think that's a lot more interesting. I also want to see, Rainer get an opportunity to do some awesome captain stuff. You know, I want to see him be a leader. I want to see him do some exciting stuff and lead an away mission with Owo and Detmer.
Yeah.
You know, let him do that. And unlike you, Paul, I did not enjoy Spider-Man Burnham. I did not enjoy Spider Burnham.
Ship. No, I didn't say I cared for that.
I just super annoyed by that. You know, and what bothers me about it is the writer's room in modern Star Trek in general, but specifically Star Trek Discover, feels like action supersedes writing.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's been true since the first season of Star Trek Discovery. You can tell so much story in the space that they're wasting on all these special effects. I mean, look at what Star Trek Picard accomplished in season 3, and they didn't have this kind of budget, you know? And it just blows my mind, the money that they spend on Star Trek Discovery, when I would prefer that they just hired another writer, you know, and actually do some story, some, you know, really challenging story. You know, you look at the original series, The Next Generation, and Deep Space Nine, look what they accomplished absent these giant budgets. Mm-hmm. I like the special effects, don't get me wrong, but I want the story too, because otherwise it's just like eating cake for dinner. Yeah, it's great, and then you're sick to your stomach. You know, the blow-ups and the sandstorms and the ships crashing, that's all really nice, but it's not particularly memorable. It's not what's going to bring you back as a repeat viewer.
It's not. Yeah. It's not.
It's just candy.
Yeah, it's candy, and for what it's worth, you know, it's a bit gratuitous. And, you know, I hate to say that about such, you know, spectacular action, but at the same time, you know, I'm at that age, and we've talked about this, but I'm at that age where I don't need everything to be the length that it is if it's gratuitous. And, you know, like, especially with this, like, you know, the I think the first episode was about an hour. The second episode was like 53 minutes. Really, both of them are 43-minute episodes that were extended out to an hour.
Yeah.
You know, with unnecessary, and I like action. But some of it was there was a lot of unnecessary flair to some of these things that just extended out the episodes a bit much.
The action that we saw in the first episode would have been a lot more fun if it had been more people, right?
Yeah.
If you had, you know, something going on with the ship, and the Owo's doing that thing, and, you know, I'm sorry, Detmer's doing the thing, and then Owo's doing something cool, and, you know, kind of like that scene in Star Trek 2009. Where Kirk and Sulu are, you know, skydiving to the orbital platform. You had a bunch of different characters doing stuff, right? That's exciting. When it's just Captain Burnham's got to save the day everywhere she goes, that gets a little boring. Because you know they're not going to kill Burnham off. You know something bad's not going to happen to her.
Yeah. And hey, can we maybe stop putting the captain out as the only person on these away missions? Like, it's literally the captain and Book, who's not even a member of the team.
Uh-huh.
And the other one's the captain and Saru, who's on his last day. Like, you know, it kind of feels like these away missions shouldn't always have the captain. And I understand that's been established since the original Star Trek.
Yeah, yeah.
But we've progressed beyond that.
Agreed.
You know, and there are other characters that could, you know, we can still focus on the captain plenty, but, you know, there are other characters that could use some of that spotlight. And frankly, for whatever it's worth, probably would have been, you know, from just a pure story standpoint, more useful on those away missions, given their skill sets, than Burnham. So, anyway.
Yeah,
that's a lot of complaining for two episodes that we're pretty decent about. I felt pretty decent.
It's a tremendous amount of complaining,
but you know, hey, get used to it. We've got 8 more weeks of this. I will say I didn't dislike the episodes. I'm curious. I like that we have moved into a feeling, at least in these two episodes, of establishing a fun tone with more humor. So just to kind of end on a positive note. I hope that, though I don't anticipate the writing will change or some of our complaints will change, we're 5 seasons in, right? They're not going to change the formula. They've already been filmed. I do hope that the tone continues for the rest of the season, and I hope they ended on a high note, because I know it was not originally intended to be the final season when it first went into production, and they had to pivot. So hopefully we'll get a satisfying ending.
Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about Red Directive and Under Two Moons. Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your message on the podcast, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
Hey, Paul, we're going to do this all over again next week and for 8 more weeks after. No, 7 more weeks after.
I cannot wait, Aaron.
I know you can't. I know you can't. See you, Paul.
Bye.
Star Trek with Aaron and Polly is a production of IOMGeek.com. Have a question or comment? Hailing frequencies are open at 972-763-5903. Tribble wrangling provided by Triskelion Trays. No troublesome tribbles. Mr. Aponte's wardrobe provided courtesy of Garrick's Clothiers, conveniently located on the promenade.